Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Vera Broskell, author and cartoonist of Anya's Ghost, debut picture book author of Leave Me Alone. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 306 of the podcast with Vera Broskell. I can't wait to share this episode with you, but first, we got a couple of reviews on iTunes that I wanted to share. First is from Lorianne Dean, who writes, "Teachers, librarians, anyone in children's literature, if you haven't listened to this podcast yet, you are really missing out. Matthew Winner creates an atmosphere of cozy kidlit intimacy that makes the listener feel like they're hanging out and chatting with the host and guest. I like to imagine I'm holding a cup of hot chocolate and sitting by a fire with them." I love that. Insightful, heartwarming discourse, an absolute pleasure to listen to. The perfect mix of ear candy and therapy. Lorianne, you're making me blush all over. Thank you for those kind words. And then the second one is from Miles J.W., who says, "In his essay for the 1981 book Celebrating Children's Books, Arnold Lobel recalls an interview with Dr. Seuss in which a reporter callously says, 'Don't you feel like the general quality of children's books is quite low?' Dr. Seuss, taken aback by the question, responds, 'Now don't ask me to degenerate children's books. You're not going to make me do that.' Lobel comments on his interaction by saying, 'Here, obviously, was a man who, having been around children's books for a long time, was well aware of their real worth. Matthew Winner is cut from the same cloth. Here is a man who lives a life celebrating children's literature and the people who create it and understands the fully their real worth. His interviews are constantly fun and insightful, and he speaks with some of the greatest writers and illustrators working in the industry today. The podcast motivates and inspires me to do the best possible work I can. Thank you, Matthew." No, thank you, Miles. My word, I'm getting all choked up. That was really kind. Thank you so much. So I have a stack of, or a bag of All the Wonders buttons, and I'd love to share a button with you. If you share a review, I want to share a little token back of thanks. These reviews help other people to discover the podcast and help give them a sense of what they're going to find once they get here. So thank you all for advocating for it with your words that way. So listen, if you write a review, I'm going to send you an All the Wonders smiley face button. Just go onto iTunes and post a comment or rate the podcast and then email me here at allthewonders.com. That's H-E-R-E at allthewonders.com. Let me know. Include your mailing address and I'll send a button anywhere within the U.S. As a thank you. And if you live outside of the U.S., let me know and I'll record a video message for you. Maybe I'll sing you a song. All right then, time for today's awesomeness. Vera Broskell debuted in the world of picture books this past September with Leave Me Alone, a story of an old woman with 30 grandchildren who just wants some peace and quiet so that she can get her knitting done. Well, it's kind of that and a whole lot more, but you know me, spoilers. I love every inch of this book and saw things from a whole new perspective once learning that Vera spent 10 years of her life working as a storyboard artist. Those skills give her a distinct voice in her art that I'm sure you're going to pick up on right away. Enjoy the read, but first, enjoy the listen. Here's episode number 306 of the podcast with Vera Broskel. Welcome to the podcast, Vera Broskel. I am excited to talk to you, even if you ever shout out today, leave me alone.
Hi, Matthew. It's nice to be here. I'm a big fan.
Vera, your book is out in the world now, in the wild, not your picture book, I should say, because Anya's Ghost has been out and has been on a bunch of book awards and has been loved. But now, Leave Me Alone is out, and I get to read it to children, and I get to say, today's book that we're going to read is Leave Me Alone. It's wonderful.
And hopefully they get to help you with that part.
Oh, my word, all the time. I mean, you've made it just that you've written a character that, as sort of cranky and needing to be alone as she is, we just smile when she says it. It's just great.
Oh, good. Good. I wasn't sure if parents would get tired of hearing that over and over again.
Well, librarians won't get tired of it. How about that? And my son hasn't gotten tired of it, so that's good. So I could talk from both sides, but before I talk and talk and talk, Vera, I want to give you a chance just to share with the people listening the way that you're pitching this book to other listeners. Now that you've have a picture book out in the world, how are you telling friends about this book?
Well, my friends know that it is basically about me.
No!
Me in a few years. It's about a kind of a cranky grandmother who lives in a small house with many, many grandchildren, and they are all up in her business, and winter is coming, and she needs to get her knitting done, but it's very hard to do with 30 children crawling all over you and taking your yarn away and eating your food and jumping on your bed. So she puts all her things in a big sack and throws it over her back and leaves the village yelling, "Leave me alone." And she's just trying to get, she's trying to find a quiet place to get her work done. And everywhere she goes, there's somebody who's very interested in what she's doing, whether it's mountain goats or bears or space aliens. And it takes a little bit of a sci-fi turn from the traditional folktale, it kind of looks like. But in the end, she finds somewhere to get her knitting done and goes back home.
Oh yeah. Your sci-fi twist was like the thing that sealed the deal for me. That was the mind blowing, like, I have never seen this in a picture book before. This is amazing. and so I won't spoil it because it's so worth coming to, but man, Vera, your book is fantastic and it reads aloud so well. I've already read it maybe 30 times to not only my son, but then to students at school. And it's just so good to have a book read that well over and over and over. You've done such a beautiful job on it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was trying to make it good for read aloud. There's a nice big speech bubble with really big letters every few pages in case some kids want to help out with that part.
Well, and I also love the humor in your text. So, okay, do you mind if I read an excerpt? Is that okay?
Yeah, go to town.
We come to this place where, so the context that you already shared was that she's got all these grandchildren. She's not getting any work done. So the first thing that she runs into, the first group of inhabitants she runs into is that she goes into the woods. And here's the language that I love so much. When we meet the bears, the old woman walked through the deep, dark forest. She made a fire so that she could see what she was doing. And then she sat down and began to knit. The bear family was very curious about the light from her fire and about what she might taste like. "Leave me alone," the old woman shouted. But they didn't listen because bears don't speak English. So she picked up her sack and left. And it's that. It's that humor. That, like, wonderful straightforwardness in your sensibility that I love in all of this. The way you root it so much in reality when it's an old woman talking to a family of bears, being surrounded by mountain goats, as you said, and moon men at one point. It's just all handled so straightforward, and it's just perfect.
Oh, thank you. I am blushing.
Well, you have lots to blush for, because the faces in this book, the expressions, the, like, every page has, I had students that were falling in love with your goats choking on yarn balls and, like, eating them like spaghetti, closing in on one another, you know what I mean? It's there's just so much in your art that speaks and pulls your eyes away from the story. I felt like it was a book that the kids, I could go back and they probably wouldn't even have noticed that there were words on the page, because they were just in your art. They were in that world.
Aw, that's great. Yeah, it was really nice to get to spend some time on the images. I was working in animation for 10 years before I started doing books full time recently. And you really don't really put the time into adding little details and stuff to the pictures, because nobody really looks at the pictures when you're storyboarding. They just get used for the production and then they're thrown in the garbage. So this was really nice to make something that the kids were gonna spend some time with and actually get to see.
Oh yeah, and you've got from if I call it like scenes, from one scene to another, from one situation to another. I like how your palette just changes, that we start off in all of these like greens and yellows, then it goes to whites and purples, and it just the transfer of the color there is just, it again, it's just so entertaining on the eye. It really brings us along on that journey. And I have to point out that, just because I feel like not spoiling things, because we know, we've said that, and you can look at the cover to know that the old woman goes to the moon. But the way that she gets to the moon, Vera, I won't say how, but I need to tell you, that was brilliant, the way she gets to the moon. There was something there that just felt like, I don't know, it felt like The Little Prince to me. It felt like it just felt reminiscent of like Miyazaki stories. There were just things there where I was like, this is, I've never, again, I didn't see it coming that way. And it seems like such a natural solution. But I think it looks natural, again, to your credit, because of the way you've drawn it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that spread that we're not describing to keep it mysterious, that was sort of what made it click as a book for me when I thought of that. And I actually thought of that face down on a massage table in some kind of like weird dream state. That's when I figured out, like, I've been trying to figure out this, I've had the character for longer than that. I was trying to figure out what to do with her. And I like the idea of her trying to get further and further away from other people so that she could be by herself. And then that kind of image just dropped into my head while I was getting a massage.
See, so I
and the book was so easy after that.
Nice. I like the idea that, and I know this experience because I write as well. And I've had this experience where you can walk away from your manuscript and your brain is still working on it. And solutions like that can come to you. I like that experience. And there's something to be said for, in psychology, for leaving tasks undone so that our brain does still stay working on it and working out solutions. But how long has this story been with you then? If that solution propelled it forward, you said you've had this for years, this idea of a woman who just wants to get away from people.
I don't know if it was like maybe like a year or two, too long. I have other ideas with her that were just much more complicated. I have a, just kind of coming from comic books, I'm used to having a lot more space to work with. So it was the hardest part for picture books for me was thinking of something simple enough for 32 pages. I'm used to 200. And so I kept kind of stalling out with her because the story would just be too long. And pretty much all that I kept of the original idea was the title and the character design.
Oh, well, to be able to understand your story though as a picture book, to know that it's that's that would be the right home for it, the sweet spot for it to live, the required, editing down of your story to get it to this, I think has made it a really rich story. And so, from one reader to you, I feel like it really was what the story needed to serve it well.
Oh, thank you. Unfortunately, it hasn't been repeatable. I've gotten a lot of massages since then, and nothing else has magically written itself.
Well, thank
But I'm
God
going to keep trying.
the story didn't come to you
I
when you tripped in the sidewalk and broke your nose or something. Good Lord.
might be cheaper. But
Ah, well. I
yeah, it could
hear
be. There were worse places to write. I'll say that.
So all of these connections that come to me when I think of a person with a story like this who's visiting schools. So I just want to ask, and you also said that in part the spirit of this old woman is sort of a connection with you. So do you as well knit? Do you like to knit?
I do. I very much like to knit. It's a little bit self-indulgent to put it in the picture book. I felt a little guilty doing it, because I feel like I spend enough time knitting already to work it into my stories. But yeah, that's something I'm obsessed with. I actually knit a bunch of little sweaters to go along with the book.
You did not. That's amazing.
Just as a little 2-inch sweaters. I think I made like 25 of them. That my publisher sent out and took to ALA and stuff. Those were very hard to part with.
You need to make a what's the width? You need to make like a 9-inch sweater for when you're at these conferences to put over top of your book. Just like a little book jacket, but it's a book sweater.
That's a great idea.
Well, knowing that, see, I picture like you coming into schools, and I picture what an artist brings to the table, being that you can draw your characters to life in front of children, and you can, have that element of visual storytelling while you're with them. But the notion too that you do knit, that they can see what that looks like, because that's not something that everyone does, and it's something that I think for a lot of us. I remember my mom knitting some, but she it stopped, when she didn't have any more babies. She stopped doing it. It just wasn't a hobby that she kept up. And it does make me always think of like seeing the idea of seeing all this yarn that was around and how it could become something new. I just think that that's a, I don't know, it's just a neat thing.
Yeah, it's super warm and tactile and colorful and meditative, and it's something that you do for other people. So it's very generous, but you do need people to go away for you to really do a good job. Like, there are people who can do it socially, but I can't. If I'm trying to maintain a conversation while I'm doing it, I'll screw up. There'll be like an extra arm on the sweater. It's no good. So you do need to be left alone, but the end product is frequently for other people. I don't know. That's kind of how I feel about books as well. Like, I love sharing them. I love making them for other people. I love seeing other people reading my books or wearing things I've made them. But a big part of that is that I get to be by myself working on it. That's just as much fun for me. Like, I'm so happy right now, just inking comics alone in my room, listening to podcasts. It's heaven.
Well, I like that sentiment, and I haven't quite heard it put that way. The idea that there is this really important part of the process where you, the creator, just gets to be by yourself with the thing that you're making, with your creation, before you share it with all of us. Because you've had that experience now with two books where you share the book and then it doesn't belong to you anymore. Kids take a stake in the book, which is great. It's important that they do, and it's important that you've left room enough in the story that they can have ownership and part of the story, but to have that time alone with it is nice too.
Yeah.
Do you I so I'm thinking as I'm just my brain wandered to something else, which is that I had mentioned to you that I was interviewing another cartoonist last night, and he was saying his comic came out recently, and it was whatever it is, like 200 or 250 pages. And just that hitting that point of, where you're sort of getting lost in your work and you're only halfway through doing, so much inking and so much work. Was that experience different for you or similar for you with the picture book as well? Being that, I mean, you're doing fewer pages, but I know that it's a different kind of storytelling as well.
Yeah, this was very different for me compared to working on Anya's Ghost. I think maybe because I'd never done picture books before, and I'd done quite a few comics. I'd done like short stories for the Flight anthologies. I felt like I really wanted a lot of editorial help on the picture book, so I worked really closely with Connie Sue, my editor at Roaring Brook, and she was amazing. Like she is a pro at this. So we went back and forth a lot, and it changed a lot just through our conversations and showing it to friends and stuff. So the writing part of it was definitely, it felt very collaborative, and I didn't feel alone on it, which was what I wanted because I was terrified. This is very, very hard. but when it came to the art, I did get that. Like, I did all the paintings in about a month last summer, and I did get that, like, total perfect flow meditation zone, just working on watercolors for hours every day. Yeah. So it's kind of best of both worlds.
Nice. Can I ask you about when you sold this book and working with an editor? I have so many questions about working with an editor, because I like that you're saying about how the story changed. When you had this idea, when you sent it off to Roaring Brook, or when, I don't know if your agent did or not, but regardless, when Roaring Brook found it and decided they wanted to purchase it, to buy this idea, you said that the story changed, right? It changed some from when that happened.
Yeah. The structure of it was always the same. It always kind of had the same twist, I guess, or gimmick, or whatever you want to call it. We're being very coy about this.
It's worth it. It's okay. Totally worth being coy.
Like her journey itself was structurally the same, but the details changed. It originally had this scene where she was in the woods with some chipmunks who were going through her stuff. And then she went deeper into the woods and met the bears. And Connie, very quickly pointed out, like, what if we just lost the chipmunks? Like, they're not that different from the bears. Do you miss this if it's gone? And I totally didn't. I wasn't going to fight for two more pages to draw. So that went out, and the story just got tighter and tighter that way, just little changes like that. And sometimes it would just be changing a word or some punctuation, just like little things. But having another pair of eyes is invaluable, and it's something you don't always get in comics. Comics, at least in my experience, haven't been as heavily edited, which is good and bad, I guess.
Well, and different from...
But I'm more... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as an editor, that's different from what you would get if you were, like, working in a critique group, if you were working with... if your agent was like an editorial focus, it's just different. It becomes a different process when this is the person that's going to print your book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's as invested in this thing turning out good as much as I am.
So for you then, as you're working on these edits, are you just like making new dummies, or at this point you have sort of like how much redrawing is involved? Or you must be working just in sketches, though. You wouldn't be inking and doing any sort of much final work by then, right?
Yeah. Most of it got done in the dummy stage. But there were a few spreads that I repainted just because the colors didn't come out right.
Okay.
Like the big spread with the village, the palette wasn't right for that. Like, it was a little bit more pink and purple, and it did feel very autumnal. So I did that one over again, which, I was not enjoying at the time, but I'm really glad I did it.
It looks like a harvest. Even the buildings are orange and red and yellow and tan. It's nice.
Yeah. I mean, all I did was change the color of the buildings. Like, I just redid the whole thing just to make them not... purple anymore, but I think it's absolutely worth it. And I think it, I I've done a lot of work digitally, but it was really important to do this book as traditionally as possible. You can tell when it's printed, if it's been messed with too much.
Oh, yeah. I think that there's, I mean, there's things that I can see in your watercolor and the way that the colors overlap and the way that you can see the texture in your lines that feels, I mean, I know there's some like effects you can do when you're doing it digitally, but this, it just feels handmade for good
reason.
I really
wanted to keep that. And I try to do my comics the same way, just like ink everything by hand, even though a lot of, like, computer is great for planning, but when it's printed on paper, it's nice if the original artwork was also on paper. It just feels more at home.
So I like hearing that when you sell a book, and I'm aware that this is a truth of publishing, but to know that when you sell a book, that's not just it. You don't just take that final book and then take it off and we're done and let's print it. But that there are some pretty significant changes that do happen, such as things not looking right and having to change the palette, or having characters in there that even though they've been with you on your journey this whole time, it might just take the right set of eyes looking at it to question whether or not they need to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think animation really trained me for killing darlings.
Did it?
For sure. Because, well, I mean, everything you do is, again, disposable, but also it's to help a director. So you're constantly getting new ideas from someone else, and you can't defend your work just because you like how a drawing turned out. Like, it's got to work for the film overall. And I kind of feel the same way about the books. Like, it's for a greater good. Even though you have to spend the whole day redoing something, if the final product is better, it's going to be worth it.
So what work did you do in animation?
I worked at Leica here in Portland, Oregon.
You did? Holy moly. Oh, I try not to. I get too much in my head if I look too much stuff up. It's a dangerous
That's
thing.
That's great.
You work with Ovi Nadelku? Were you there with him?
Yeah. He was actually the first story artist I met when I started on Coraline.
Oh, that's awesome. Whoa.
Yeah.
Cool. Worlds overlapping. Amazing.
Yeah. He's doing picture books too. Yeah.
Oh, cool. And for 10 years you were there. What was your role at Leica?
I was a storyboard artist.
So people come to you with, the director comes with you. Here's our story. Here's what we want to do. Help us to pace it out. I mean, I feel like you're saying this, and I feel like this makes perfect sense why you make comics, because you're like working from pacing. But how does one get into the role of storyboarding, and how does the story come to you?
I got into storyboarding after college. I studied classical animation, so just hand-drawn animation. And we got to make short films, and I figured out while making that short film that I hated animating, but I love the storyboarding part. You just sort of get the key ideas down, and you do the fun expressive drawings, and then you move on. Like, you don't have to do the hundreds and hundreds of drawings to animate it. So based on that short film, that's how I got the job at Leica. And at Leica, we would get a script from the director and basically just illustrate that script, whatever we had in our heads. And then that would get, you know, revised and reiterated and edited together before it was filmed and animated. But we were sort of the first hands on the story,
yeah,
which was really fun.
How many people work on at Leica, at least, how many storyboard artists are there? Are you like a small group? Is it like you alone get a portion of this? I can't imagine that, but I'm so curious.
It depends on the movie. Coraline was a very small group. I think there were maybe four of us.
Whoa.
Like maybe five or six at the most, but the core group was maybe four people. And then other films like Kubo and the Two Strings, which just came out, that was seven. At its maximum.
Still.
And I think they're back down to four again now. It just sort of depends.
Goodness. That.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Also, let me just point out, for those that have not seen these movies, that you're just, like, name-dropping amazing movies that you just happen to be involved in. Kubo, oh my god. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
So good.
It was a pretty cool place to work. I enjoyed it. For sure.
I like that it seems, and maybe not if you look at percentage of actual people traveling over, but I like that it seems like a lot of animators have moved to making picture books, to storytelling in that way. I mean, I suppose in part you get to tell your own story then. It's nice to work in a team, but there are also times when it's nice to have the story be yours and yours alone. But you animator folks, you people that come from animation, that you can tell in your art. There's just a way, there's a movement, there's a pacing to the stories. I can name down like all of the animator people that I've come to know are animation background people because of talking to them here and just going like, oh, of course you come from animation. Like right away I think of people like Molly Idol, or I think of people like Aaron Becker, and just looking at their stuff going like, it's so, the movement is just so sweeping, it just makes sense. And to have you, same in that way, to be pacing out the old woman's journey in this story, your story is so big. It makes the picture book you're holding so massive. The magnitude is just amplified because of the scale you play with in your story, and in the way you're illustrating you know what I'm trying to say. I can't talk. The way that sometimes you zoom in on her and then sometimes she's really small on the page. Totally a scale.
The camera work.
Is it wrong or annoying that I and probably people like me say camera work a lot when there's like no camera involved? Is it okay to say camera work?
I don't know what else you call it. That's how I think of it.
Awesome.
It's you're moving the viewer around. That's all the camera's doing.
It fits so beautifully in that other phrase that when we read, it's theater of the mind. I love that notion too. I feel like they really go hand in hand to think of camera work when there's no camera, and theater of the mind when it's all playing out in your head and there's no actors. Well, listen, Vera, your book is amazing. Like, it's seriously amazing. And I hope a million billion people read it. But more importantly, I'm really grateful that I got to read it and that then I got to share it with my students and with my son, because it's really, really good. And that thing that we can't talk about, because I'm not that kind of a person to spoil that thing. I need people just to like read the book and then just high fives on Twitter after you read it. Because it's just one of those things that it's just congratulations, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You made a really beautiful book, and I'm so excited after reading Anya's Ghost, after reading now Leave Me Alone. I'm so excited for the other stories that I know you're working on, because you have got a gift and you're so talented at bringing that story to the reader. And so just thank you. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited. I have the opportunity to tell my own stories finally.
Well, to go from this till the next time we talk, when I get to hear more about how all of your like elementary school visits are going, because once the picture books are coming out, I feel like that goes into like major full swing, which is just awesome. I can't wait for hearing about all of the schools you visit that just have like piles of yarn everywhere, just to celebrate thematically for you. But before that, I want to close by giving you the last word and by bringing it back to your readers and to my readers. So let me ask you this. I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning, Vera. What message would you like me to bring to them from you?
I think despite what the book says, nobody actually wants to be alone. And that's kind of where the story winds up. And I think however kids are acting, everybody kind of has the same desire to be accepted and loved. And I think, I mean, not to get too political, but A lot of people are probably stressed out right now, and children can pick up on that. So if you look around and you see a kid looking worried or sad, just, take care of them, look out for each other, look out for adults that look, stressed out or sad, because kids have the greatest capacity for kindness and love of anyone I've met. And you're lucky to be surrounded by them every day.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Matt Holm talks about Marvin and the Moths, his debut novel with Jonathan Follett. Plus, he shares some cool news about Baby Mouse, the long-running graphic novel series he co-creates with Jenny Holm, Matt's sister. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.